Hey, Real Talkers, it's Dr. Nikki here, and we are focusing on episode 9 of Ginny and Georgia. We are almost at the season finale of this gripping and wonderful teen dramedy that we've been in, or at least I've been enjoying so much. Angie, not quite as much as me, but I know a lot of people are watching out there, and I know that there are great conversations happening with you and your teens. So pull up a piece of couch and get the talking going. All right. Love you guys.
Here we are, Dr. Nikki and Angie. We are your Ginny and Georgia experts. Or
yes, we are. Or voyeurs. Are we like little voyeurs in the lives?
Observer.
Of Ginny and Georgia?
Yeah, we're observers. Your Ginny and Georgia analyzers. here to unpack all of the emotional upset that we see in each episode. So we are here to be thoughtful and talk about Ginny and Georgia under the lens of emotional decision making and thought processes and mental health, so that you can have a conversation with your teenager about these characters, taking the spotlight off of them. It doesn't feel like an enmeshed conversation when you are not talking about your personal feelings, but you're talking about a TV show. But it's a great way to think about our emotions. How do we express them? When do we make assumptions about other people? What happens when someone breaks up with us and we're blindsided and hurt? And how do you let those emotions out? Let's talk about it. Nikki, what do you think?
Yeah, I love what you just said, that you could talk about it in relation to these characters and not necessarily make yourself so vulnerable, and just be curious about what they might think about that in relation to the characters. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really wonderful way to do it. And like we had said before, most people are watching some show together. It's amazing when I speak to most families that they've got this family show going on. And generally, it's kind of a fun teen dramedy, whichever one it is. Lately, I've been watching Love is Blind, which is I'm scraping the bottom a little, but I kind of
love Love is Blind. I don't know why I have, like, yeah, it's just so fun.
It's the funnest. And I've been watching Indian Matchmaker. So I always say that this is kind of part of the work I do. So I get to watch it without any guilt. The truth is that we should be able to do what we like to do without guilt and still try to figure out how to live our big, wonderful lives. But this is one way where you're with your teenager, spending really good quality time with them, and then having those really fun, open conversations that will bring your relationship lifelong connection and fun. So this is actually a no guilt zone about the wonderful things we watch, because really there are such great things that come out of it, especially if you're doing this with us, because mm-hmm. we found that with our families and we're so excited to do that with you. But you were talking about Love, Angie, and Ginny definitely starts out episode 9. So we're in episode 9. Now it turns out that this episode was just so jam-packed, and Angie and I didn't have a lot of time to watch episode 10, but we're going to unpack episode 9 and get you all those gems that come in these episodes. But Ginny talks about her feelings about love, and there are so many thoughts about it. Love is parasitic. Love is painful. Love is evil. Love is all-encompassing. Love is everything. There are just so many ways in which people experience love. And she definitely could see that in relation to her mom, Georgia, and Zion, her dad, who clearly love each other. Really, Zion is the only person that I've seen Georgia not turn on in a certain way, not ready to kill, not ready to X out, not being fake to. She's pretty much herself with Zion, and Zion is pretty much himself with her, and they do love each other, but they have this really bad cycle going on where they get together. They have this torrid, exciting, big, mostly sexual relationship. And then Zion said something about the pattern. After they have sex, Georgia starts to regret it, starts to think about what her life would be like, probably remembers whatever happened with her and Zion before. And then she gives him the cold shoulder and he has to leave. And Ginny really suffers every time because she loves when her dad comes and stays with them. And then he normally has to go based on whatever's going on with him and Georgia. What do you think about that, Angie?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I see that, you know, that it's her own fear getting away in the way. When you have a history with someone or a pattern with them, it's really hard to let go of that. So in the back of George's mind, we know that she's like, Zion leaves, he has to travel, he's a nomad, and that our life, my life with Zion isn't stable in the way that she pictures it. And so even when he says, I'm ready to commit, I'm ready to be here, she just is still not really believing that. Whether it's true or not, we don't know. We don't know the future. But Zion's saying, I want to be here. And then she probably can't really accept that new idea of like, yes, I fully trust and believe that you will be here and be stable, since every time in the past, it's ended up that you wanted to travel and you wanted to go on adventures and not be stable.
Yeah, he definitely has this wanderlust where he is ready to pick up and take off for his next adventure. And Georgia really wants some kind of stability, a stability that she's never had before, one that she definitely didn't have through her childhood, and one that she's trying to create for her kids, although they have moved so many times. So this would be the first place where things were pretty stable. Ginny made some friends.
I mean, I think the fun question to ask here is it the person or the vision that you have? So for every individual, we can all look at ourselves like, do I have a picture of what I want my life to look like? And then I'm just plugging this extra person in, which I think in Georgia's case, that's her vision with Paul. I want my life to look like perfect house, perfect fashion, wearing khakis and going to the soccer game, she says. And Paul is not necessarily the strongest connection. He just fits in that picture. Or is it this true love that she has with Zion, that he knows me at my core? We've loved each other from day one. We care about each other, trust each other, know each other. And you know, should I follow that? But it doesn't fit with my picture. So
but is it enough to have a history with somebody though? Because I'm sure that there are lots of people that we might have histories with, and somehow we think we should be with them because it's a known quantity. And so in some ways it's the safe person that you know. But if you know what the pattern's going to end up being eventually, then how long and how many times does it take before you realize that this is probably not something that I should pursue? The thing I find interesting with Paul, because I know what you said last time, you're like, I don't care about Paul. Paul is like kind of a non-entity in your mind. And I don't know if you're still feeling that way or not, but Paul understands himself and his goals and desires and Georgia and her goals and desires. And he believed that they will both move each other into the type of life that they somehow envision, and they'll help each other with that. He's very clear about that. He's also not threatened by Zion being there. He also knows what she's about and is willing. So he's got a lot more backbone than I thought he had, and a lot more understanding of whatever was going on with Georgia and willingness to take that on.
I guess when I heard Paul's heart, I mean, Paul's speech, there was no heart. To me, that was all strategy. And there was no love for Georgia. He said, I want power. We are the same. You want power. I bought this ring because I knew you're the woman that comes around once in a while, like once in a lifetime, because we both have the same vision of power, which to me said nothing about Georgia, like nothing about love or connection or appreciating her. It was like our values align and we both want power, which I hated in so many ways. Now, instead of Paul being like invisible.
Now you can't stand him.
Oh, like, no. What the heck? And then Zion's speech was so, it was, I love you. You are home to me. I've been everywhere. I've done everything. This is what I know. I know who we are. I know who you are. This is what I want in my life. Which felt all heart and not strategy, right? He wasn't going for power. And yeah, so then that was my take on those two things. But I know, of course, Georgia just attaches, and for genuine valuable reasons, like a stability and home and having opportunities for her kids, all of that. So
that's so interesting. I love the way you put that Zion was all heart and Paul was all strategy. And I think about it because I was just saying, I was watching Indian Matchmaker and they are all getting together because there is something strategically similar about mm-hmm. every person that's being matched. Yes. And I don't think that those matches work any less than the love matches. So the question always is, if there is a deep love, how long does that last? And can love change in your mind? And is that enough? And what about that idea? Ginny said something about loving somebody who you shouldn't love. Like, what do you do when you like somebody that you shouldn't? Somebody you probably shouldn't be with. Somebody that is not the best for you. What happens there? What do we decide to do in those cases? Do we follow our heart, or are we following the strategy that would probably bring us to the next level of where we want to be? Or do we have to find some combination of both?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, right? And I see the value in the strategy. That makes so much sense. If you're making a lifelong commitment or you're picturing the next 20 years, you want to picture somebody that it's going to work with. So, and the idea that parents could choose the right match for their kid, they probably know their kid pretty well. They know their personality. They know their strengths and weaknesses. They could pick a strategic match that is going to work, and perhaps love can grow. So it's not that I don't believe in strategy. And I'm sure that's just an individual question for everyone. Are you going to make the pragmatic decision in your life, or do you just follow your heart? I love somebody. It's probably not the right fit for me, or this relationship is going to be a challenge. I see that there will be struggles ahead, but I just love them. And that's how I feel. And that's what I'm going with. So everyone can, you know, make that decision for themselves. And then the things that I don't like about this are that when Jenny like takes on that fault for herself, it was my fault. I'm sorry. I'm the reason you got hurt. Which we all tend to do, to like blame ourselves. But then she could kind of give herself, I think, some wiggle room there. Right. Like, I'm a strong person. I'm a capable person. I made my choice. I just felt invaded. Like, I felt like this, you know, I didn't want Marcus showing up in my room unannounced like that. Felt harmful to me, and I spoke out and I reacted, and maybe I didn't say everything perfectly, but now to take like ownership of I'm the reason you got in an accident is pretty.
But I don't think that she wanted Marcus out because she felt invaded. I think she started to become defensive and not trusting of his love, and mm-hmm. things had happened where she felt betrayed, and she just kind of lashed out at somebody else. It's kind of the, you know, the crap runs downhill. Like, somebody lashes out at you and you lash out at the next person who comes by. He was mm-hmm. professing his love to her. I know that you definitely have feelings about the way they began. That's for sure. And whether Marcus truly loves, can love, whether it'd be a good choice or not. And I totally agree with you. But I think she was lashing out because she was hurt, and it felt like she was going to hurt back the same way that she felt hurt herself. I see that happening all the time in school, or the way people treat their kids, or the way, like, all of it, that people are just mm-hmm. reacting to however they feel to the next person that's almost unexpected in a certain way. And I love that thing that you brought up. Are we responsible for somebody else's choices? So Ginny said some things that she probably shouldn't have said. I think she was fairly mean about it. It hurt Marcus's feelings. Marcus still gets to decide if he's going to go out and do something that's harmful to himself. We're not responsible completely whether somebody harms themselves. It's like when somebody gets hit and says, oh, I deserve that, or whatever it is that happened to people, or we don't deserve that, that we still get to take ownership of how we react and respond. We could be hurt. We could be sad. We could be upset. We could get mad, but there's still an ownership. So the fact that she takes on that responsibility is I think a good thing to question. Yeah. How responsible are we for other people and their destructive behaviors? Do we cause other people to do things that are not good for themselves?
Right. Do we take on blame for these things? And I mean, while we're talking about blame, and the other love relationship we have is Meng, the friend group. Everyone cares about each other. They all believe in each other and want to be supportive. Everyone's making mistakes along the way, but the trust and love is there for each other. And then we see Abby notice that Marcus and Ginny are in this thing or standing close to each other, whatever she saw. And she knows right away that something is up in this secret relationship. And then when she tells Ginny, you absolutely cannot tell Marcus's sister that you are dating him or like him or anything, because that will destroy our friendship. And she blames Ginny or puts the onus on Ginny. It's 100% in your hands to keep our friendship together. And she also reminds her, plus I'm fragile because my parents are divorcing. If I lose our friendship, that I feel like that's the only thing that I have of value in my life right now. And just uses guilt and blame to make Ginny feel like she can't decide whether she wants to tell people about her relationship with Marcus or not, her closest friends.
I completely agree with you. It was so interesting how Abby just decided that Ginny saying this would destroy Max and then ultimately destroy their friendship. What about it would destroy their friendship, though? Was it the betrayal? Was it the fact that she was dating her brother? Was it the fact that she didn't say anything at first? Like, which part do you think they're all so upset about?
Yeah, I mean,
would Ginny destroy their friendship? Really?
This didn't make a lot of sense, but it's clearly Abby. We already know she's just acting from a place of fear. She's feeling all the insecurity. She already felt that as Ginny's the new person in the friend group. And she pointed that out and said, if she finds out that her new friend who she trusted and brought into the fold has actually been macking on her brother this whole time, that will destroy trust. You know, I don't know if it's just Abby's kind of play to regain the top spot in the friendship or hold it against Ginny that she still feels like angry that Ginny won Max's heart or something. Who knows what it is, but yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so there we have everything kind of built on a stack of lies that you just knew would come and shoot you in the foot eventually. And I think we all know when we do something that we know is going to come back and bite us no matter what. And if we ever get that little feeling, I got a phone call from my daughter the other day, or it was a text saying, I think I just did something that's going to like come back and bite me in the butt, she said. And I was like, yep, then it definitely will. Like if you already know it is, and your mind is going in that direction, and you knew what you said or whatever happened, and she didn't even tell me what it was, but all I knew is, yep, eventually it will. And you'll have to deal with that, you know, whatever it is. So she goes and asks Joe for advice. And Joe is always the brutally honest guy. Now, Joe has not been completely brutally honest about his feeling for Georgia. He definitely has them, But he really does tell Ginny to be honest. And I guess you could never go wrong with the honesty. You might hurt people and people might be mad at you, but we could allow them to be mad at us and know that we can't control how it is they're feeling and what they're doing, and still let that be the better option. I don't know what you think about that, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question to ask when you're not sure about the decision you're making. Like, is this my honest truth? Would doing this, even if it would hurt people, would this be truthful for me so that I'm not operating within a lie, within being fake or covering up or denying? Like, no, I never really liked Marcus, if we think of it in Ginny's case of like, okay, fine, I'll just pretend I don't love him. I don't have any feelings for him. We haven't had this past like hookup that I'm still not over, whatever it is. And I'll just cut that all off to keep my friend group together. I mean, we can see that that probably wouldn't work out very smoothly.
But you have to keep track of the lies. I think it's not an easy thing to keep track of that. And then if somebody gets wind of something, and then it always makes you act a little bit weird. So you're never truly your whole self with the group if mm-hmm. you're operating on a group of lies or being somebody different than who you are or right. trying to fit into whatever you think they want you to be. So nobody ever gets the real you anyway, which is probably not a great basis of.
Yeah, I think Max is like the realest character that we see. And she's just herself and she's out there and she's messy and she doesn't usually try to present some kind of perfect version of herself. She's saying all the things out loud. So I thought this breakup scene of her just being happy and loving and invested in this relationship and feeling all the love, and suddenly her partner Sophie. Gets accepted to NYU and says, I think I don't see us continuing. And she's heartbroken and she's sobbing and she's out there and there's Oreos and she's leaving the crazy voice messages to her ex. Why don't you love me? And then it switches into like, also you're fish food, and all the emotions are coming out. So I thought that was a good window into what you often feel inside, that turmoil and all the emotions happening, but sometimes we don't express more on Gossip Girl. Everyone's just has a perfect face and looks perfect all the time. And they're like, I'm fine. I don't know what you're talking about.
We're all stoic and stabbing each other in the back.
Yeah.
This is definitely not happening, but they're outwardly being unkind to each other at times too, especially at the end of this episode where they're not right. talking to Ginny. And that was pretty upsetting that.
Yeah.
Couldn't they have just a good fight about it and then talk some more? Like, wouldn't that be fun just to be like, I'm so happy. And then it's like, I just couldn't tell you, and then them be okay. Like, what's this? You know, this cutting off thing.
That seems more Meng-esque to have the fight and say, why didn't you tell me, and talk about it.
Yeah, maybe they could slap each other in the face one more time, like whatever. But the fact that it ended like that is definitely, I would say, one of my worst fears growing up is that I would be exed out of the group. And probably one of most people's worst fears is that the one group that you felt connected to, that idea of feeling like this is your place, that you are home, and then you're just exed out, is so hurtful. Mm-hmm. It makes it really, really hard. And I know that people feel like that all the time, or the possibility is there all the time. And we're always trying to somehow stay in the group. Abby tries desperately to do that.
It is. It's so true. And especially, I just think high school and middle school are these settings where that group dynamic just becomes so important and such a big part of your life. And being on the outside or being excluded is so painful. And you just have to show up and face that over and over. And I don't think most people would say, I wouldn't change myself or I wouldn't change who I am to fit in with a group. But really sticking to that is really hard. Sometimes you think maybe I would change a little bit just to get along with everyone. That would be pretty nice and make
I would change a lot of it if I could be part of the popular group. I mean, I definitely, when I was younger, probably would have done some of that. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. It didn't quite happen that way, but if I knew how to do something like that, I might have tried.
If the opportunity was there.
If the opportunity arose, I might have tried. I didn't realize that Marcus was a virgin too. That was really interesting to me. I don't know.
Oh yeah, we didn't know anything about that because he, right, like the way that that all happened seemed like, I guess we had just assumed he was already, he had the girlfriend, right?
And yeah.
Yeah, and then the next day, yeah, so it seemed very much like he was experienced.
Like a player, definitely.
A player, yes.
A player.
And yeah, then and, just using her.
Yeah, and he really offers Jenny some real honest, an honest ear for her if she really wanted to talk about something. He actually seems like he's worried about what's going on with Jenny and Jenny hurting herself. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate it. Did you get there or?
No, I didn't see the last 5 minutes.
Oh, the last five. Well, so I'll tell you. So they are together and he really talks about like, what does it feel like for you when you are burning yourself? And she was mm-hmm. able to really go into like how she felt, that she felt like she would wants to scream all the time or scream at something or somebody and it wasn't okay. And that mm-hmm. burning herself actually kind of made it all feel better. And he mm-hmm. offered himself up as somebody that she could scream at and talk mm-hmm. to about it. And then he also said that he knew this therapist that was very helpful for him when his friend died the year before and he had a pretty hard year. And Jenny says that she thought it was okay to burn herself because nobody else knew about it. So there's like a lot of humiliation and shame related to it. And now mm-hmm. that somebody knows about it, I think that she's kind of understanding that she might need to do something about it or at least figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah. And we often, that's often the excuse, right? It's like, I'm not hurting anyone else. My drinking, it's only affecting me, my drug, my whatever my habit is, my self-harm. It's just me. So as long as it's me, that means I'm not hurting anyone else. But really, of course, there's always those ripple effects so that Jenny's little brother doesn't get the real Jenny. Like he gets some idea of like, oh, teenagers don't scream or instead of having a meltdown, like there are impacts that we're just not seeing when we're doing something harmful to ourselves.
I completely agree with you. There's that ripple effect or like the collateral damage that happens when you're drinking and you might not remember something or you mm-hmm. say something that you don't mean. So I hear what you're saying with the collateral and the, mm-hmm. the ripple effect of whatever's going on.
And I'd just be much more on board if Marcus wanted to have these conversations with Jenny when he met her. If he said, like, hey, you're new here. I just feel like I want to talk to you more. Or, you know, maybe we could be friends. I want to know who you are. Tell me about you. That would be one way to start a relationship. Like this craziness where I need to rewatch the episode. But had they talked to each other? Have they said five words to each other? They hardly knew each other. He got in bed with her, they had sex, he stood up and left. She was just there wondering what was going to happen. There was no conversation. And then the next day said, that's nobody, when he looked at Jenny and told his girlfriend, yeah, she's no one. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, this is like, I don't want to say unforgivable, but
I think it's unforgivable in your eyes.
I Absolutely. Think it's unforgivable. I don't care if he's a nice guy under that. When someone treats you that way, you're not like, tell me your backstory. You had a hard year last year.
Right.
Now you're Absolutely. A trustworthy person. It's yes. just All of that feels like
right. And that's the good question. When somebody is initially unkind or acts in a certain way or whatever, does that kind of end everything in terms of like what the possibilities for them are in the future? Do we get a glimpse into what they would be like in the future? Maybe we have to assume that Marcus is going to turn on her at some point again, and really his true colors were there initially and then something changed. So
yeah,
I think that's an interesting point. Like, do we trust what people show us? And often we don't. I see that a lot with what we say about, you know, people who are acting stupid, and they're like, well, he would do anything for you, or, you know, if you needed something, they would be there, or whatever it is. And is that forgivable for what it is they're showing to us at that moment?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, what do you decide has more weight and value? And clearly Ginny's saying, like, that first initial impression, that's all going away now and being erased, because now I see that he is kind and thoughtful and considerate. And so now I'm going to trust him. She's making that decision.
And damaged and broken. I mean, Padma really told Ginny that he's got a lot of struggles right now. So what does damaged and broken mean? Because I think often we use those words to mean something about ourselves. Does that mean that we're not a complete whole person, that we can't be trusted, that, because I feel like people talk about that a lot, like somebody is damaged or broken. Can we get over the damage? Can we change the future? Like, there's a lot that can happen. And I think we all have had our struggles. We were never promised a perfect life. And what is the definition of damaged? And I think some people get damaged over a lot less than other people in their minds or whatever it is. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole new podcast, right? I think you're right. People, we say like, I'm broken, I like to ask the question to my clients, like, what is a normal life? What is normal? Does anyone go through life without ups and downs and turmoil and facing challenges, whether it's like abuse in childhood or maybe it's bullying in middle school? Like, if every person that you meet has a story and has faced some conflict and hardship that they struggled with, and does that mean that you're a broken person? If life involves this hardship and meltdowns and emotions, are we broken or not?
And I think we're only broken if we decide we're broken. There are some people who have those hardships and decide that they're stronger. Other people have obstacles and realize that it's the obstacles that have created the scenarios for them to come up with elegant new creative situations. It really is where you get to decide something about how you think about it. That doesn't mean that the difficulty wasn't there. That's not minimizing whatever the difficulty was. It's just that we get to decide what we make that difficulty mean. And if we make it mean that we're broken, then we will act as if we're broken, and we will live out our life as if it's broken. And most likely we'll continue to have those broken thoughts and feelings about ourselves and about how we relate to other people. And that's really, I think, the only way we change is to decide something different.
You're so right, Nikki. That was brilliant. Everything you just said was so powerful. It's that decision. We don't feel like we can make the decision. Well, I'm broken. What can I do? It's just, I'm broken, so I have to live my life this way. And we don't realize that we can say, I'm not broken. This stuff happened to me. I get to decide what my future looks like. I get to decide how I live out my next 2 weeks. I get to make choices in my life. And I've faced hardship. And looking at that through that lens, instead of I'm broken, I will always be broken, I'm unfixable, that's just so overwhelming to live your life with.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I think that we're not taught how to decide to think something differently, because our society has been set up to continue the cycle of where people do feel marginalized or broken in some way, because I think it keeps us very powerless. So if you're feeling broken and the way you live your life is as if you can't achieve what it is you want because you've been broken in that way, it's almost like we're doing the work of whatever the oppressive society had kind of done initially to a marginalized group or whatever. So actually the biggest revolution for a society that is oppressive like that is to really decide something different about who you are as a human and what's possible for you.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think we can look at Georgia that way. Like she probably inside, she believes she's broken. Right. Like I have to do that. I have to fill my life. I have to achieve power. It has to look this way. She's just, all of those are like band-aids to cover up her brokenness. Whereas if she just thought like, I have faced challenges and I'm awesome. I'm smart. I'm capable. Mm-hmm. I can handle this. Instead of this, like, I'll lie to my kids, I'll make up these fake letters and I'll hide everything and get the credit cards as long as it looks good. No one will know I'm broken. It's that inner belief that she's broken.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting because part of it seems like her power, her ability to do that. But I think what you're saying is true, that she believes that she's broken. And so she has to manipulate everybody and control the situations around her so that nobody would believe she's broken and that she somehow thinks she'll move forward that way. It does always come back, though. She always has to leave at some point. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens this time.
We'll see.
All right. I think that's the wonderful conclude. What a great conversation, Angie. I'm kind of loving it.
Yeah.
I'm loving talking Ginny in Georgia.
Something good can come out of Ginny in Georgia.
I know you don't quite believe it, but yes, it can. And I just wanted to tell people that I'm writing a new book. Okay. And it should be out because I'm doing myself a little book challenge, trying to get something out quickly, only because probably part of my perfectionist personage, I don't know if that's the word, is that it would take me a long time to just get it right and to get it out there. And so it could take a long time to do something like that. And I think it's really important for us to get what we know out there. And really, while I'm in a good place in my life, while I feel like I'm not fighting for my life at every moment, that I can actually put my perspective out there so that other people who might be in the thick of raising their teens and where things are struggling don't really have a lot of support. And so I'm happy to be that person who can support you guys and what you're doing. You're doing great. And I just got the title of the book and I'm still taking votes on it because I haven't quite decided, but it's called Trouble Talking with Your Teens. And the subtitle is Discover the However Many Mistakes, I Haven't Figured However Many, Worried, Overwhelmed Moms of Secretive, Non-Communicative Teens Make That Prevent You from Having a Lifelong Fun and Connected Relationship. That's a mouthful, but I think you guys get the gist. So when it comes out, I would love to share a copy with you all. And if you need any more support here, you've got Angie, you've got me. We are happy to help you through whatever situations you need to get through. And of course the podcast is here. So
that's right.
Yeah.
We're here to remind everyone we're not broken. You're not broken.
No, you aren't. You are a full, wonderful human being with all the emotions, living a human life.
That's it.
Okay. All right. We will speak to you guys next week when we're going to watch episode 10 of Ginny in Georgia. Just keep the wonderfulness going.
See you then.
Bye. If you want to really learn how to have the most meaningful, fun, connected conversations with your teenagers, get in touch with us and see if it makes sense to work together. You will stop future generational trauma, as well as really decrease the incidence of high-risk behaviors just by your strong and close connections. All right, speak to you soon.